Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, August the 25th, and today we're going to chat with our good friend Frank Burke, author and businessman, my good friend in Wisconsin, as I like to refer to him. We'll be talking a little bit about the media and what many of us, and I like to hear what Frank has to say about this because he wrote a book about the media, but I think that the media has been too agenda-driven lately. Rather than journalism-driven. In other words, they write the headline before they write the story, and then they go out and, you know, get the facts to meet the headline. And we've seen that a little bit with the narrative of January the 6th, the 2020 election, as many other things. So we're going to talk about that with our friend Frank. So let me begin by saluting our friend Frank and asking Frank for a little weather report from central Wisconsin. How's it going up there, Frank?
Well, I'll tell you, it's been either we've had very, very hot and terribly humid days, or alternatively, it's been raining cats and dogs. So it's the one follows the other. But it has not been a terribly pleasant experience to be here. Thank God for air conditioning is all I can say.
Yes, well, we're having a heck of a week down here. It's been in the high 90s, and the heat index is triple digit. So we're so happy that we have lots of air conditioning to make our lives a little bit easier, to say the least. But yes, it's been so warm down here. You know, I don't know. Maybe Frank, you have an explanation for this. How did people live in the 19th century? I'm sure they were, or the 18th century or whatever. I'm sure they must have had hot summers and hot days like this. How did they cope with it? It's been fascinating.
I've been fascinated by that also, because if you look at the way they dressed, I think they sat very quietly, frankly.
Right.
And they used fans. The women had fans. I guess the guys even had fans. But it was really a terrible time. A lot of people used to die. Of heat stroke and things like that over the summers, because there was no way that they could really keep cool. And I can remember my great aunt, who was born in 1875, back in the 1950s when I was a kid and we didn't have air conditioning. In those days, a window air conditioning cost over $1,000,
wow,
which put it way out of reach. But
sure.
We had a wonderful old beagle hound named Skippy, and she would soak dish towels in water and put them on Skippy's back and do that to keep the dog cool. But as for the rest of us, I can remember bringing the mattresses down to the first floor from the second floor because it was warmer up on the second floor, having all the windows open. And you just couldn't sleep. It was like the sheets would get clammy with sweat. Oh, it was awful.
Yeah, it was. You mentioned how people did it before. I just realized, if you look at a lot of photos from back then, they were always under a tree. I wonder why.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So I never thought about it, but you always see these photos, lots of people under a tree. So I'm wondering if maybe they were looking for a shade. I know that it's interesting because if you go to houses and if you like visit East Texas, which is
East Texas
is very green compared to lots of other parts of Texas. The homes had a lot of windows, and the idea was to have a lot of circulation. Like they were strategically built so that there would be a lot of circulation. The exact opposite of now, where we don't have any windows, but back then they had a lot of circulation. I suppose another thing, too, as long as we're talking about the past, I think that now that we don't have windows, now we can have tall buildings. Because I would have a hard time, I don't know of any insurance company that would issue an insurance policy on the 75th floor where somebody could open a window.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, you mentioned that, but they also had high ceilings in the older houses, at least on the first floor. I remember the first house I ever owned, and I loved it, restored an 1845 Greek Revival house, row house, in Baltimore, Maryland, and the ceiling was 12 feet high.
Mm.
And my aunt also used to tell me about, in the summer when it was very hot, they would take the sides off the streetcars, and people would ride the streetcars just to get the breeze from the movement of the streetcars.
Wow. Or maybe go to night baseball games to cool off and get the breeze, you know, in the big stadiums, you know, there's a lot more breeze. But
well, don't
anyway.
Forget they didn't have the lights for the night baseball.
Well, that's true, too. That didn't happen until much later. That's true. But that's right. That didn't happen until almost 1940 when they actually
something like that.
Well, we got a topic today that is right up your alley, and that's why I wanted to chat with you, because you wrote a book about the media a couple of years ago. And I think the media has become a negative factor, I think, in our country. Because the media seems to be too identified with one side or the other politically, and it makes it difficult sometimes to believe or to watch something and say, okay, I believe this and I believe that. But before we get to the topic of the media, I want to ask you about your impressions of what's happening in Afghanistan. Because I think President Biden has turned people who wanted to get out of Afghanistan into people who now think it's a good idea to stay in Afghanistan. I mean, he has messed up things so badly, and I want to hear your thoughts about the whole thing, Frank. So go away. Shoot it. Go for it.
Well, yes, Biden's conduct in this, or actually there is no Biden. And we'll get to that.
Yeah.
The point is that the people who are running him, and I think a large part of this has to do with Chinese influence, because the Chinese are going to be the ultimate winners in this. They've already established relationships with the Taliban. And they have, you know, there are many rare earth metals and things like that, the poppy growth for narcotics in Afghanistan. And that will be harvested by the Chinese in one form or another. And one of the things that bothers me very much about the media is the fact that the bulk of the very, very large bulk of the mainstream media, as it's called, is under the control of the Democratic Party. And in fact, you can tell that they are taking talking points from the party, because you've probably seen in a couple of cases where they'll go through a vignette of maybe seven different newscasters on different channels, and they're all using the same words, the same phrases to describe a situation. And this is not a coincidence. It's beyond coincidence. So you have that. But Biden's screw-up of this, let's put it this way, the other thing that was so bad with the media that they never, ever got into, they covered for the fact that this man has terrible cognitive problems. He is in the throes of dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line is that is progressive, and we can see that.
Yes.
So that back before the election, when I'm sure the people who were handling him were saying, okay, we'll get Joe in there and we'll make it work. Joe will just be our puppet. Well, I'm sorry. Joe is now out of control. I mean, he was told by all of his own people, by the military, by his advisors, do not do this thing with Afghanistan, and he went ahead and did it.
Right.
So you're looking at somebody who is disturbed, who is the ostensible leader of the free world, and will not be for long because there is no leadership there.
Yeah.
He cannot do it. You may as well say, I'd like to see, and when I hear these senators say, boy, I hope he gets stronger. I hope he develops a stronger message. He cannot do it. You may as well say he should play he should run the decathlon.
Right.
In the Olympics, as to say that he should turn around and become a strong, capable leader. It's not there. And
right.
For all that the media covered up, now we're all paying the price for that.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the
election. And they're still not admitting it.
That's right. And I want to talk a little bit about the election and how the media, I think, contributed or was very helpful to him, I think.
Absolutely.
But let me bring up something about his physical or his condition. Because, as you know, the 25th Amendment exists to replace – well, there's different stages of the amendment. It can be a temporary president in the event that, let's say, a president has a heart attack like President Eisenhower did in the mid-50s when he was in the hospital for several days. That would be more of a temporary president where, at that time, Vice President Nixon was sort of – the president, but not totally the president, because they expected...
Right, the acting president.
The acting president, that's it. They expected Eisenhower to come back. Or it could be like like happened with Reagan and with the second Bush, where there were some operations and they were, you know, out of it for a few hours, so there was a transfer, and the acting president was Bush the first time and Cheney the second time. For those two, but there's also the 25th Amendment is also talks about a president who is fully incapacitated. Let's say someone who has a stroke and simply cannot return to the office. And we've all known people who that's happened to, where you know you get a stroke and you know you're living. I mean, your heart is beating and you have a signs of life, but there's no way you can go back to work. And that is, but I don't see how. You apply the 25th Amendment with President Biden in this condition because he's not incapacitated in the way that you know most people would consider it. So the only option, I think, would be a resignation. That seems to be the only option that I could see at a time like this. But we don't really have a tradition of resignation either in the country. So it's a real mess, Frank. I mean, I'm kind of long-winded, but I think you know what I'm trying to say. It's kind of a big mess.
No, absolutely.
Because there's
we don't
really have a constitutional solution to a fellow who is in dementia. I guess I don't know how to say it any other way.
I think what you would have to do in that case, you would have to have whoever it was, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, heaven help us, the authority rests in the cabinet. And look at his cabinet, the guy in the dress with the lipstick, the Secretary of State who doesn't know where he is.
Right.
It's quite a cabinet. But in any case, you would have to have a panel of doctors examine him and administer a cognition test. Now, Donald Trump took one. When people said, oh, Trump is senile. Well, Trump was never senile. He's not senile now. But to prove it, he took a cognition test, and he passed it with flying colors. Biden refused to do it. He challenged Biden in the run-up to the election to do it himself, but he would not do it. And I don't think he would pass that test. No. I think any fair-minded group of doctors, of physicians, psychiatrists, looking at him would have to say, this man cannot do it. He not only does not have the capability for the thought process, but the stress will be very bad on him, which it clearly is now.
Right.
And that's something that would have to be done. Now, excuse me, you know, part of the 25th Amendment is a good thing. We had this situation once before in our history, and that was Woodrow Wilson.
Yes, that's
Woodrow
right.
Wilson had a major stroke, And in the time that he was bedridden, it's largely been thought that his wife was in effect running the country. You know, she comes out of the bedroom, well, this is what he just said. Well,
right.
Who knows, you know?
That's right, that's right. Or the other way, she would bring a paper to him and say, sign here.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know,
exactly.
We don't really know if Wilson even read the paper.
Right.
But so, yes, I've heard about that situation. That would have been perhaps a good time for a 25th Amendment. And maybe that's what prompted the 25th Amendment, because I had always read that it was more the Eisenhower heart attack that did it, because the amendment passed in the 60s. And so that – but maybe it was something that was coming for a long time. But one thing about Biden, and then we'll talk about the media and Afghanistan, that what hurts me is when you watch this man, it's obvious that this is not what a 78-year-old man should be doing.
No.
You know, having the most stressful job in the planet. I
right.
mean, there's a reason that most of the presidents are in their 50s or 60s. But when you get up there, he is the oldest president we've ever had.
Yes.
And when you get up there, you could just tell that this is taking a toll on him. And I feel kind of sorry for him, actually, Frank. I mean, I don't vote. Mm-hmm. I didn't vote for him. But I feel a little sorry that maybe somebody put him up to this, somebody who wanted to use him, And now this poor guy, I mean, the other day I saw a little of him on television, and he looks – you know, he looks uncomfortable. I don't know. I feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
Frank.
Well, you know, I have to say, I would accept for the fact that the lead up to this was years and years of corruption. The man has been very corrupt. His family has been corrupt, and the whole relationship with the Chinese and the Ukrainians, read Russians. You know, stopping the pipeline here. I mean, somewhere there is even in dementia, there are some clear moments when there are things you just don't do. You don't stop the Keystone pipeline and then give away the ability to pump gas and oil to the USSR.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, that's wrong. There's a lot of evil in that, which mitigates my pity for him, because he has made a mess of things, and he's done it. You know, there's just too much ego there.
Yeah, well, the net result is very negative for him, because right now he is tanking in public information support. I mean, public data or in the public polls, he's tanking. He's down to 41%. In the USA poll and 44 and the Rasmussen, you know, but you know, polls are polls, and you can't bet your life on any of them. But when a bunch of them say the same thing, that probably means that, you know, there's something there to look at. And most of the polls right now are showing him 45, you know, some under 45, which is dangerous territory for a president so new. I mean, let's face it, he's only been president for not even 7 months. Well, I guess it is 7 months. And 7 months we've seen this man mess up the inflation, and that's primarily the gasoline, the stupid oil
yes.
production. I mean, that's all about gasoline, I think. There are other
Absolutely.
Factors, too, like the, you know, the chains, I mean, the supply chains and all of that. That's true. That has a lot of that has to do with the virus, but still, it's the gasoline, I think, driving the price of the increases and everything. And then you have the border, which is, I mean, you almost have to ask yourself the question: who in their right mind would open the border of a country in the middle of a pandemic? Because most countries actually close the border during a pandemic.
Of course.
So who came up with this? So you have to wonder, if it's him, then he's pretty stupid if he came up with that. And then, of course, Afghanistan, which is almost exhibit A of how not to do something. I, just for the record, I was one of those who believe that we should have kept a force of about 2,500 in Afghanistan as an insurance policy, not a fighting
yes.
force. Just have a base there. Just have a base with airplanes. In the event of an emergency, you're there. You want to be in the neighborhood if there's an emergency.
Yes.
And so I
always
felt
for intelligence gathering.
That's the other thing. You need it for that. So I always felt that was what we should have done, not say we're leaving and we're leaving all these airplanes and all these guns. I mean, that's just unbelievable.
It's absolute. We've given the Chinese, the Chinese for one, because now they have access to our latest military equipment.
You know, I didn't think about that, but you're exactly right. I mean, now they've got the latest jets. They've got the latest tanks. I mean,
they don't even have to. Yeah, the helicopters, you name it.
Yeah, they don't have to defeat us anymore. They can just pick them up at the in Afghanistan. So I hadn't thought about that, but that's a very valuable point. But just a month ago when he was saying, none of this is going to happen. You know, they're not going to fall. Well, I mean, he was so far off. He was either misinformed or he just said that. And he does have a history of saying things, Frank.
Well, this is part of the dementia. When he was in a factory in Wisconsin a few weeks ago,
that's right.
He said, I drove an 18-wheeler. at other times, he said he was a coal miner. and several other things, which are just, it's crazy. You know, there's a very brilliant young lady, British extraction, I believe. She has a lovely accent, Miranda Devine, and she writes for the New York Post.
Oh, yeah.
She was the one.
She was great, yeah.
Yeah, and she was the one who exposed the whole Hunter Biden thing. And she's writing a book on it. And I heard her interviewed, and one of the comments she made was, I have learned so much about Joe Biden in doing the research for this book, and he has always been totally delusional and a liar. And hey, look at all the times he committed plagiarism.
Right.
Picked up somebody else's work and made speeches. But I think in the end, he believes that he wrote that.
Yeah.
I think probably if you said, really, did you drive a truck, Joe? You bet I did. Hey, man, I was the best on the road.
That's
he's just crazy. I mean, let's face
it. Yeah, he'll say
and nobody
like,
is
well,
saying
I,
it.
You know, I took off a couple of weeks from the Senate and drove a truck for a living. Then,
right.
40 years ago or whatever. But it is really, it's part of his character to say these things over the years. And so it would not surprise me at all that he was there speaking in front of the media. A reporter asked him a question about the situation in Afghanistan, and it just came to him to make that up.
Yeah.
As other things, too. And I'm sure that there were people in his circle saying, oh, my gosh, Joe, what did you just do? And that's part of it. Let me take a little break, Frank, and then we'll come back. We'll get more into the conversation of the media and some of the problems that I see with the media. I want to get your thoughts on that as well. We're going to take a little break and we'll be back with a friend right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Just a reminder that the music is the music of my good friend Carlos Guedes from Venezuela, and we have a link to his website if you want to check out his musical activities as well as some of his concerts here in the Dallas area. Let's get back to our friend Frank Burke. Frank, just quickly tell us about your book. I know I mentioned it, and we have a link on the show information about the book, but just take a quick second and tell us about the book, because I think that's a good segue into what we're going to talk about next.
Sure. The book originated in a class that I was a guest speaker at Marquette University Law School. And we discovered the teacher who was in charge of the class, who asked me to speak, and I both discovered that these law school students, kids in their second, third year of law school, were totally unfamiliar with many of the classic criminal cases in American history. So we put our heads together and produced this book, and it's about the media, A Law Unto Themselves is the name of it. It's about the media and the criminal justice system, and the fact that you have to look at it from the standpoint, as you do in politics, who sets the narrative? And in so many cases, the media makes up its mind to take a particular case, usually something scandalous, and break it and do the investigative reporting and all of this. And, you know, the thing goes awry. They become the people in control. And the justice system works with them because the people in the justice system want to use them. The heroic prosecutor wants to come out and have the news conference and be covered because he may have political ambitions. The media people want to see this thing in the worst possible light because the, you know, blood sells papers, whatever. But there are a great many cases like that. It goes way back in our history. And it was fascinating to research it and to research the how and the why of so many of these instances. For instance, you go back a few years to the Enron case, largest white-collar crime thing, I think, in history up to that point. And what did we find? We find that for 6 years in a row, Fortune magazine named them as the best company in America. So, you know.
They even named the stadium after them in Houston. The stadium in Houston, the new baseball stadium, was named Enron Field for a while.
That's right.
Obviously, it has a different name now. But yes, that's
and,
right.
And the problem was the media was, you know, piling on this legend and, oh, my God, these people have the gods of finance and put your money with Enron, and all the time it was a bunch of crooks.
That's right. And it's all about the narrative, and that's precisely what I want to talk about, because, you know, something happened on the 6th of January, Frank. I don't have to tell you, you know, what happened. Those people broke into the Capitol. And the narrative that was created that day, of course, it led to President Trump's impeachment, not conviction. But the narrative for the last several months has been that a bunch of Trump supporters went in there, organized, and so on. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I think what these people did was very stupid. You don't run into any building, really, for that matter, into anywhere, any property. You don't go in and behave like that. So these people who did it were very stupid and did something wrong, and I don't defend it. But it certainly, as we're learning now, the FBI is, I guess, about to release a report. Reuters had a story about this saying that what they're basically going to say is, yeah, there were some people, but we don't see any evidence of any of them working together to plan this out. It was just a bunch of people that just behaved incorrectly. And what hopefully will become now the issue of January 6th is not what these people did and their connection to Trump or white supremacists or whatever. What hopefully now we can actually investigate who made the decision not to protect the Capitol. Because if the Capitol had been protected, this would have never happened, Frank.
That's correct. That is correct. And I'll tell you, I have two close friends, and they're both mature adults, and they and a few people they know, that they live in Virginia. They went to that rally, and the intention was that this is a Trump rally, because a lot of people were seeing the irregularities in the election. Of course, it just came out in the last 2 days that the then Attorney General Barr ordered people who were whistleblowers and were coming to the DOJ with information, don't investigate that. He put a lid on any investigation of election fraud. But these friends of ours who were there saw people. Now, granted, there were people, there were Trump supporters there, but there were also Black Lives Matter and Antifa people. And according to them, they made no bones about it. They were wearing the black costumes that they normally wear, and, you know, the faces covered up and all of that. And they were there to start trouble. And some of the, you know, it has been said that the FBI, there is testimony of other people who were encouraged by FBI agents. Come on, go on up that way. And then, of course, you had that poor innocent girl, Ashley Babbitt, who was shot by the cop who was cleared after a confidential investigation where nobody could present other evidence. She was not armed. She was not doing anything particularly dangerous. She was nowhere near any of the politicians' offices. And she was just shot. And this and they have not released the identity of this individual. Theoretically, he's going on Lester Holt tonight and fessing up to it. People know who he is. But, you know, there's talk that he too is a Black Lives Matter supporter. I don't know. I don't know that for real. But the other disgrace is the fact that people that were arrested in connection with that are being held, some of them in solitary confinement, and allegedly being mistreated in the Washington, D.C. jail. And they refuse to allow anybody in there. They've refused to allow Matt Gaetz and a couple of other representatives have tried to get into the jail to talk to them. They will not allow that. This is totally against the law.
Well, sure. It's not the kind of thing you expect to happen in the United States. I mean, that's what you expect to happen in Cuba, but not in the United States. I mean, we don't treat people like that in prison in the United States. But what I found most disturbing about the whole thing is the way that so many people in the media, not all of them, but a good chunk of them, were basically saying the same thing every day. I mean, the narrative, and repeating it and repeating it. It stuck. I mean, let's face it, it did stick, and people began to believe it. But now it's starting to turn around. It's almost like 50-50 now, because I think more and more people are, you know, reading some of the stuff that you were talking about, Frank. But I thought it was so, because it kind of ties in. I always felt from the beginning, the way this event was treated by the media, that I thought what they were trying to do was to basically paint every single person who voted for Trump as one of these people. They were basically saying, you know, these are Trump voters. So they were trying to paint everybody who voted for Trump as one of these people, as if somehow a couple of hundred people would speak for me or for others who... And that was the part that got me angry more than anything else, because, I mean, I wasn't there. I didn't rush into the Capitol, and, you know, I don't know anybody who did either. And so, but the narrative was over and over and over again, that narrative, Frank. And now we find out that it isn't quite so. Are people in the media going to go on TV over the next couple of days and say, well, you know, we have something to report, you know, what we told you for the last 7 or 8 months wasn't quite true? Are they going to do that? I doubt it.
I don't think so. But, you know, what we spoke of before about talking points going to them, it's obvious to me, and this is my opinion, but from what I have seen of the whole thing, this was a legitimate demonstration that, yes, were there some crazies in there and were some of them Trump supporters? Yes. But it was a legitimate demonstration that was hijacked by the left to make it look like something else. And we talked before about receiving talking points from the Democrat Party, okay? Now, what happened there, if you were seeing that on TV, you'd say, wow, that's a riot. No, the word they all used was insurrection, which is a very powerful political term. It means taking over the government, trying to overthrow the government. And that's not what it was, even at its worst. You had people breaking into the Capitol. They were where they shouldn't have been. But the only person killed was one Trump supporter. And yes, they came out with all these lies about, oh, one of the Capitol police was beaten to death with a fire extinguisher. No, he came home that night. He had a stroke the next day and died.
Right.
He didn't die as a result of that event.
Yeah, in fact, the only person who died out of the so-called insurrection was that young woman that you were talking about who who was there to protest, as she has every right to do. But it seems to me, Frank, that this narrative also was about the 2020 election and the way, for example, that now President Biden, then candidate Biden, was allowed to campaign from the basement of his house. And, you know, he didn't have to answer any questions. They wouldn't force him to do a press conference. I mean, they picked who he spoke to. You know, he never had he never appeared on Chris Wallace's Sunday morning show, or even Meet the Press, to my knowledge, or Face the Nation or whatever.
No.
He never appeared on any of those. He would always be interviewed by people that the campaign selected, and none of this outraged the media, which is really troubling, because you would have think that if anybody would have been angry at a president or a candidate not answering questions, it would have been the media. If anybody would have been really angry, it would have been them. But no, they just went along with it. And that's frightening that they did that, Frank.
More than that. It was the New York Post and Miranda Devine broke the Hunter Biden story, and the media covered it up. Nobody went after it or said a word about it, because ultimately they knew that it involved Joe Biden, and it did. He was the one who demanded that they fire the prosecutor in the Ukraine, and his son received that huge job with the Burisma, whatever it is, the energy company.
Yes.
And he received the diamond from the Chinese. And Biden said he never had any involvement with his son's business dealings. And there are pictures of him and Hunter and two Chinese. So come on.
And no, I think
it was the media that covered it all up.
And especially the social media, you know, the Facebook and the Twitter, who refused to print that stuff. I mean, normally in Facebook, you can, like, post something from another source, like in this case, the New York Post. Or in Twitter, you can tweet to all your friends this article. All of that was not allowed by Twitter and by Facebook, which is really amazing that they got away with that, considering they're supposed to be working under Section 230, that does not turn him into or does not allow them to discriminate politically in that fashion. But they did it. They did it, and they got away with it, to say the least. They got away with it, and I think they made a lot of people angry. But let me give you another example, Frank, of how I think the media and playing the narrative has actually done the country a lot of harm. And that is with these mandates about wearing a mask or the vaccine and so on. Now, in the interest, again, of full disclosure, I got my vaccines 3 months ago, so I'm vaccinated. But I've always wondered whether a mask was something that actually made sense or didn't make sense. I've heard all kinds of opinions. But I think the media politicized or allowed this event to be this whole virus to be so politicized in 2020, because it was all intended to get Trump. That was the thing. They wanted to get Trump with the virus. That was the motivation, get Trump and make Trump look bad because of the virus. But the net consequence of it, Frank, is that now I don't know who to believe. When I turn on the news, I sit there and say, I don't know who to believe. They tell me to get vaccinated. They tell me to wear a mask. And I'm like saying, you know, I'm going to do this my own research, and I'm going to study this for myself, because I don't believe a word that they're saying, Frank. And I blame the media for that, Frank.
Yes, that's correct. But I will tell you something, and, you know, it's common sense. When we breathe in oxygen, we exhale carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is what they consider the most dangerous of the so-called greenhouse gases. If you are wearing any form of mask, you are going to be re-inhaling a large amount of carbon dioxide, okay? And ultimately, if that cuts down on your oxygen, it can result in brain damage, especially in children. There is a film of a woman athlete. She's in a race. She's winning the race. She hits the she's wearing a mask. She hits the finish line and collapses because she was overcome by the carbon dioxide. And I can tell you one other thing, too. To observe a virus requires nothing less than an electron microscope. An electron microscope is the most powerful microscope there is. Okay, it's that small. It is that small. There is no woven fabric that can keep that a virus of that size inside. It's going to go right through it. It's going to be like a horsefly going through the Arch of Triumph in Paris because it's so small, and anything woven under a microscope, it's that big. It's so much bigger. So this is something that I think, without a doubt, it's dangerous. It does not help. And the government is pushing it because it's an authority thing. They're trying to teach. It's like Australia and New Zealand. They've taken the people's guns away. They're building concentration camps. They're demanding that they want to run your behavior. And if you really want to think about it, okay, if there is the virus, maybe it was a very bad flu season. Maybe there is a virus. But maybe it's not as bad as they're saying. If that were the case, if it was as bad as they're saying, would Obama's birthday party and Nancy Pelosi's fundraiser of several nights ago, would Gavin Newsom's dinner at the French Laundry, all of these things, wouldn't these people be scared as hell not to wear a mask if they felt that was the case? But none of them are.
Yeah, it was very interesting because the Nancy Pelosi fundraiser is almost comical. I mean, here you have, you know, like these kids' birthday parties where you have all these kids' tables in the patio with like 200 kids at a birthday party. So you have all these adults who went to her fundraiser, and they're all sitting out there in the patio, one next to each other. I mean, people were next to each other. It's almost like an airplane. That's how close people were sitting next to each other because they were eating out of these tables outside. And I'm looking at that and I'm saying, this is the same lady who will threaten you with a fine if you walk around the Capitol without a mask. But I guess in her fundraiser, it didn't come up. So you're right. It makes me wonder whether they believe what they're saying, because if I thought that wearing a mask or not wearing a mask would expose me or my friends to a virus, I would put a little note in the fundraiser invitation and say, please bring a mask. Or at the very least, I would give them a mask, you know, a political message mask that says, you know, vote for Pelosi or whatever. But everybody would be wearing a mask. And, you know, it's the same thing about Barack Obama. If he really believed in climate change and that the oceans are going to rise, why would he build a home right next to the ocean?
I mean, exactly.
I mean, wouldn't this house be overblown by the oceans in the next 10 or 20 years? But a lot of this I blame on the media, Frank. Nobody in the media seems to have the courage or the credibility to put an end to it. And so, you know, we were sitting there, you know, we were being told, well, we're going to shut down for a couple of weeks to stop the spread. Okay, so we did. So we stopped the spread, and then we've been gradually coming back. And then on one hand, you have the Kamala Harris running for vice president saying that she's never gonna take the Trump vaccine. No, she's never going to take the Trump vaccine. Now she wants everybody to take it. And then you have President Biden saying, well, everybody who's not vaccinated is a threat to public safety, except the million people who've crossed the border. I guess they're not a threat.
Yeah.
I mean, so you have all these contradictions, but you don't seem to have anybody in the media who challenges them. And that's what's frustrating. And I mean, some do. Some do. I'm not going to say that all of them do. But most of the mainstream media buy into this message, and I think they're hurting the country by being activists rather than journalists. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, of course they are. They're the coastal elites. And look at the two most influential newspapers formerly. I wouldn't give you a dime for either of them now. In this country, the Washington Post and the New York Times are owned by people who are, you know, media elites. Bezos owns the Washington Post, and the Times has been owned for years by the Sulzberger family. But these are people who are out in the Hamptons, without masks on, I would add, associating with other rich people and thinking, you know, aren't we great? We're the ones who should run things. These little people, hey, we have to get them in line so they do what we tell us.
That's
and
right.
That's what it's about. It's about power.
That's it. And you know, we're having a big debate here in Texas about the mask mandate. And, you know, we don't have kids of school age, so it doesn't affect us. But I think that the parents should decide whether or not the kids
Absolutely.
Wear a mask. And if
Absolutely.
The parents don't, you know, if the parents don't believe in the mask or whatever reason, that's up to them. That's not up to the school district. But I think,
yes.
Frank, one last thought, and then we'll have to go. But I think a lot of these school districts, I don't know what it's like up in Wisconsin, but I think down here, a lot of the school districts who are choosing to promote, you know, wearing a mask, I think a lot of them, maybe I'm being a little cynical when I say this, but I think a lot of them are doing it not so much because of the virus, but because of a lawsuit. Because what they
yes.
really fear is not that a bunch of kids get sick and have to go home, because as we have seen with statistics, kids are not really hurt by the virus. You always hear the story of the two-year-old who got the virus and he died. Okay, yes. But 99.999999% of kids, you know, are not really affected by it or hurt by it. It, you know, they usually have no trouble with it. But I think what they're really afraid of is not the kid getting sick as much as a group of parents filing a class action lawsuit against the school district, Frank. I think that that's what they're really scared of, Frank. Maybe that's too cynical, but that's what I think it is.
I think you're right, and I think there's another thing as well, and that is in a lot of these cases where there are Democrats controlling the state legislature or whatever, they're afraid, or with the Democrats in Washington, they're afraid that financial aid is going to be withheld unless
yes.
they toe the line.
Well, that's
and,
certainly
you know,
true. I mean, I would think that's true of like California, where the legislature is Democrat. I think Wisconsin, you have a Republican legislature and a Democrat governor, right?
Right.
Yeah,
and,
because here in Texas, we have everybody's a Republican. All three, the governor, the Supreme Court, and the Congress are all Republican majorities. But here, you know, the governor is going to the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, saying no mask, and we're fighting this out. We should know something in the next couple of days about that decision. But I'm convinced that the whole thing about the mask is more about protecting the districts against a lawsuit than necessarily public health. But I would caution, though, Frank, I know I'm being a little long-winded. I'll let you get in
a
second.
Okay.
But I would caution the school districts with upsetting the parents, because I saw the other day a father at one of these school board meetings saying, if you force my kid to wear a mask, he's not coming to your school. I'm going to
yes.
keep him at home. And, you know, and that's how school choice happens.
Yes.
That's how,
well,
you know, and you're seeing a movement of school choice across the country, Frank.
You are, and especially in the black community.
Yes.
And, you know, these people are sick and tired of having the worst teachers and the worst facilities and everything else, because the money is going into the teachers' union.
That's
and,
right.
And, you know, I think that you're absolutely right about this. And the parents have to stand up. That and critical race theory. There's
oh, yeah.
so much stuff that they are trying to shove down the throats of the American people, that it's time to really go after these people.
And I think I see the making of that avalanche or that tsunami coming. I think people are really fed up about these things. But school choice, I think, may very well be the consequence of this virus, because more and more parents are looking at the school system and saying, you know, I can do this at home on my own with better results. You know, even if the mother works and she herself cannot teach, one of the things that I've seen here in Texas is families get together and they contract a teacher, and they rent an office somewhere, and that's the school.
Yeah.
And that's happening more and more.
We're going back to the one-room schoolhouse.
That
was a very effective way to educate children.
Little House on the Prairie. We're going back to Little House on the Prairie. And what was the name of that teacher they had that always that kid Nelly, who was always everybody hated that kid Nelly in school. You know, the blonde girl with the long hair. Everybody hated her. But Frank, we're out of time. But I do want to thank you as always for joining us. We just have more reason to do it again the next time. Yes, indeed. More topics,
well, thank you so much. It's always such a joy. I would like to add one thing. I mean, I know that you're a religious person, and I presume some of our listeners at least are. Please.
I hope so.
Invite our listeners to pray for the people of Afghanistan and especially the women and girls.
Oh, my gosh.
Because,
are you ever
believe
right?
me, they need it.
Well, that's going to be the group that is going to be targeted first, because in the minds of the Taliban, they're the biggest sinners. And the sin is that they went to school.
And they're going door to door now,
Yeah, and that's really hard to believe that we didn't think about that, you know, because everybody talks about nation building. See, I never thought that we went into Afghanistan for nation building. I understand the argument that we shouldn't be taking democracy to a place like Afghanistan, but I never thought we did. I thought it was more of a national security invasion. But if there was one thing that did come about because of our 20 years in Afghanistan, was the fact that many girls were able to go to school. That's not nation building, but that's making the country better. And that's something that I believe is going to end right now. And it's very sad. I mean, I'm afraid for some of those girls and some of those academies that came about because we were there to protect them. I'm very sorry to see that coming, but that is coming. Well, Frank, thank you for your time and have a wonderful day. And we'll be in touch later. We may be seeing each other in the middle of October. I'll send you some details.
That's delightful.
God
bless you and the audience and the family.
All right. Thank you. The same to you, and have a wonderful day up in Wisconsin.
Okay, you too in Texas.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Frank Burke, author. We have a link to his book. But today we talked a little bit about the media and Afghanistan and everything else going on in the country. Thank you so much. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.